Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Wednesday, 17th of February, 2021. Markets getting roiled a bit here, as they should, because we just saw a very significant jump in yields once again, and this time a bit bigger and a bit broader, further out the curve, or further in the curve, I should say, in the U.S. from 5 years on out, jumping higher. And actually, I'm quite interested in how little the market has reacted to this so far. So as you can see on slide two, S&P 500 index merely sort of reacting off of new all-time highs and closing the day very slightly down, had managed to bounce up a little bit overnight. We're seeing a little bit of pressure coming in here as the cash session is getting underway in Europe. But just to put in perspective a little bit of what's going on here on slide three, and I think it's important to notice not just that we have a rise in yields, but it's picking up in terms of volatility. So what I actually put here was the 5 year, and the reason I put the 5 year is it actually rose by almost the same amount as the longest end of the yield curve in the US, the 30 year. So the 5 year rising some 8 basis points, only 9 basis points for the 30 years, and the entire curve really lifting from, yeah, even further in, but really from 5 years on out, especially. And you can see to some degree as well, I put in a little June 2023 Eurodollar contract. That's the short term interest rate future. And you can see that that is a mirror image of the 5 year. It just shows the market is starting to bring in a little bit sooner the first anticipated Fed rate hike. But perhaps most important here is to look at that move index. It's a measure of implied volatility for several points all along the US yield curve. And you can see that this move yesterday really saw a very significant jump in that move index relative to the first move we saw higher in yields at the beginning of the year, which really didn't see the volatility index picking up. So this is big stuff. It's important. The market is absorbing it. It's mostly so far been limited to, for example, the moves in dollar yen, like we talked about, only just now beginning to impact risk appetite more broadly. I'll get to that in a moment. But another asset, of course, that we've talked about this as well, that is impacting is gold. And Ola, the gold now pretty solidly below $1,800, I guess, eyeing those bigger supports lower. Take us through again the key driver here for why why gold is lower here.
Well, we are seeing increasing signs of stress in the gold market. We saw a $35 slump yesterday as yields moved higher, and basically we've been looking at this grind higher in yields since the beginning of January, with a little bit of a somewhat relaxed from a gold perspective, because because most of that yield rise has been driven by higher inflation expectations, and that tend obviously in the longer term to have a positive impact on gold. But what we're seeing right now is the yield price basically accelerating, and with interest with this move in mind, as you can see on slide six, the real yields, which has been anchored around this negative -1%, moved higher yesterday as yields started to pick up. So it is the gold market basically having been in almost a downtrend since August, is at this moment signaling further yield rises and potentially also further dollar strength, and that's basically sapping demand. And you talked about levels, John, and really the key right now is the 1760. It's 6280 is the 50% retracement of the whole rally we had last year. So that 1760-65 area is really key at this stage. Below that, it starts to get a little bit more hairy. You can see on the chart the next Fibonacci level, looking at the short-term perspective, is down below 1700. But before that, we also have 1725. That's 38.2% of the whole rally we've seen in gold since 2018. So we are starting to get to levels that could be tested and to some extent needs to hold in order for this not to turn into something even bigger. So we have to remember that that gold is probably one of the most interest sensitive of the metals, and that's why we're seeing the stress now with some of the with those related to industrial metals. Silver, as an example, is being shielded a little bit more due to the demand coming from the industrial side, and we can talk about copper a little bit later, and that's really still on fire.
Yeah, and the other thing that we need to keep in mind as yields rise is, of course, and we've hammered on this point so much in the past, is the multiples, the effect on multiples when you have stocks, especially growth stocks, steady growth stocks with solid earnings that where they're priced priced versus cash flows in almost like bond-like fashion, sort of like a Microsoft or what have you, where a significant rise in yields, all other things being equal, should result in a significant reduction in the stock price simply from a valuation multiple perspective. So that really hasn't come in yet. And of course, so you have to watch for the velocity of this move. If it continues in anything approaching what we saw yesterday, we would just continue to urge considerable caution out there, even at these levels. I was a bit surprised to see a JP Morgan note saying, discussing the yields and what's driving them is very important. Of course, if it is a weakness for demand in treasuries, and I think that is one of the bigger fears going forward, that the issuance is going to be so significant that the only way it will be absorbed without crashing the economy with higher yields and with absorbing savings is if the Fed steps in and does yield caps and therefore begins to really aggressively expand its balance sheet once again to absorb more of this issuance. On the other hand, if it's simply because reflecting an improved growth outlook, that's a different kettle of fish. But just, they were mentioning something like 100 to 200 basis points higher in the 10-year rate before this is a problem. I think it's far, far lower than that. This becomes an issue. But let's see. It's just very important to place this firmly on people's radar, especially because it's been so much off the radar for so long since the pandemic broke out. And now that we have yield rises happening also closer in on the curve, the fiber, et cetera. So, and then back in the FX space, how this has been moving FX, we've noted that the dollar yen is extremely sensitive to yield rises. And you can see that on slide 4, dollar yen breaking above that 105.50 area and 200-day moving average and even trading north of 106. And then the risk sentiment aspect finally beginning to impact into things like the dollar more broadly and pairs like Aussie dollar. Aussie has been one of the strongest currencies in the G10 and seeing it capped yesterday. And I think that reflects just the risk sentiment, respecting this move to Korean yields as well. And then I wonder, as I go to slide 5 there, I have a look at a chart like Aussie yen, which has just been on a spectacular run higher, driven by the reflation trade, improved commodity prices, et cetera, across the board, and higher yields. So firing on both cylinders there for Aussie relative to the yen, which goes down for the same reasons. I wonder if there's a whiplash risk if at some point these yields start to really impact risk sentiment. So then with very low implied volatilities, it's actually quite cheap to buy some downside insurance, to buy as a volatility hedge, for example, something like Aussie yen, classically a very volatile currency pair and highly correlated with a correction in risk appetite. Just put an option example, an at the money 1 month, it only costs about 85 pips. It's pretty cheap insurance if you're not familiar with options pricing for something like Aussie yen, because implied volatilities are so low. So I wonder if this, while the yen is getting a lot of headlines here and will continue to do so, I believe, if, but only if, yields continue to rise and the risk sentiment is not derailed yet by this rise in yields. If we get both rising yields and cratering risk sentiment, that's when I think maybe the behavior changes. Certainly good for the dollar, but I think the yen will be the curiosity in that instance, especially if credit spreads start to rise for EM, et cetera. And something we're not seeing so much of yet. The credit condition is still very, very, very positive, as we mentioned, for example, in yesterday's call. And still looking positive in terms of the outlook, or I guess that's what it's reflecting, the really cyclical stuff in the commodity space. You mentioned copper. Is doing quite well. I guess maybe the key there will be as China comes back on board over the next weeks, back from its New Year holiday.
That's correct, John. And but what we have seen now over the past few weeks here, we've seen increasingly from the major investment banks upgrades to their price forecast. And the latest yesterday was Citigroup just joining both Bank of America and Goldman Sachs in raising their 12-month forecast to $10,000 on LME. That's more or less in line with the high on high grade that we saw back in 2011, which is up around the 465 level. So still some upward possibility of potentials in copper. And the main reason is really the decarbonization and green transformation theme that's attracting, that will attract increased demand for copper over the years, the coming years. It's also at a time where the pipeline in terms of new mining supply is relatively weak. So we're seeing low inventory levels at exchanges around the world. And at the same time, I just put in on slide 7 this gold copper or copper gold ratio versus the US 10-year notes. And we have been discussing speculating in recent months. So we've seen this dislocation that yields have stayed low while the ratio has been going up, either indicating the yields were too low or copper was too high and or gold too low, either. But at this moment in time, it's really pointing towards the yields were too low given the excitement in the market about growth going forward. But I just want to highlight as well, John, that if we are seeing a risk-off scenario unfolding with these rising yields, then we do have to keep in mind that even though the commodity space has attracted a lot of interest, and it is there's a lot of talk about the new bull cycle, we have to remember there's a record long that's been pumped into commodities during the past 6 months. It's been pumped into those where supplies expect to be tight. It's something like copper, it's something like oil. And if we do see a general level of risk of rising volatility, then even these positions are likely to be reduced, at least in the short term. So the rising yield could cause a pause across markets and also across commodities, which really have been on fire in recent months.
Yeah, and I guess one area where things are on fire in the U.S. is some of the energy space because of the supply disruptions. Maybe a one-off event in some ways, but it looks like this situation in Texas has done some damage to actual supply. Something like a third of, I think I saw one headline, a third of U.S. production is down in Texas. I was reading an article as well about all the crazy combination of events that led to these supply shutdowns. So some of this, and I think this is an indictment of the green energy agenda and the politicization of energy sources, because apparently some of the natural gas pipelines are been switched over to running on windmills, and all the windmills stopped, so that the electric components of helping to drive some of the natural gas pipeline stuff, which used to run on natural gas, have been switched over to electricity, and then there was not electricity from these key wind farms, etc. So just an interesting situation, but I don't know how much this is going to affect, or if you have a sense of how much this will affect and how durably it'll affect global crude oil pricing.
I think it'll have a relatively short-term impact, but because what we've seen as well, you mentioned the one-third reduction, that's around 3.5 million barrels that U.S. production estimates been cut by during these past few days. At the same time, refineries, due to lack of electricity and due to lack of power, have been forced to shut down as well. So right now, refineries have cut their production or their intake of crude oil by around 3 million barrels a day. So it's some major disruptions we're seeing. So the net effect on oil is relatively low. But obviously, when we do get on the other side of this chaos, the market is likely still to focus on a tightening market outlook, courtesy of Saudi Arabia and OPEC Plus keeping production tight, and at the same time that we're seeing coronavirus cases around the world continue to drop, and thereby driving this belief that we're finally going to see a pickup in mobility over the coming months. But as I said as well, a very, very strong speculative interest in also in crude oil. And if we do see a general level of risk off, then most markets are struggling to be shielded from that. So that potentially could be the short-term risk to the markets. But generally, a short-term impact, but obviously a lot of egg on the faces in the U.S. and very embarrassing that we've seen this situation when they, in the summer, can easily cope with a massive amount of heat and massive amount of electricity production towards cooling. So this is just a very strange situation.
Yeah. And speaking of speculative interest, we have one of the big poster children of the post-pandemic rise and especially cloud-based solutions, Shopify, reporting earnings today before the open. The stock managed a pretty decent session yesterday. Obviously, it's priced to perfection when you have a stock trading at 70, that is, times the trailing 12 months sales. Just a staggering valuation for this company. It's been a high flyer. So Let's see if perfection is in the earnings call and in the forecast. There will be interesting to see also how a stock like that trades if there is a more general. And again, we're cautious here. But we're not saying to sell the market. Just I think the risk we consider the risk is rising rapidly as yields rise. But very interesting to see these very speculative stocks. In any case, how they trade around a general risk off setup, if that's what we get. And we saw Palantir yesterday reporting disappointing. They were expected to earn to post positive earnings in the quarter. They did not manage to do that. The stock was down almost 13%. And again, we have the lockup period ending on Friday. So there's the concern that we're going to see a dumping of shares possibly by insiders to cash out some portion of their ownership of this stock around that time frame. You had something over?
Yeah, I just want to finish off on just on one note. We talked about gold earlier, and one thing that this yield rise potentially is going to bring forward is the speculation about some sort of yield curve control, whether the Fed is prepared to allow yields move dramatically higher at this point in time. Obviously, remains to be seen. They are footing a massive bill already on interest payment on the debt they have issued, and they need to issue a mountain more in coming months. So if yield curve control, if that speculation starts to resurface, then obviously that could be a game changer for the gold market, because capping yields at a time where inflation is going up, that obviously will send real yields back down again. But where's the pain level? That's obviously the big question. Is it 1.5%? Is it 2%? That's what the market will be speculating about in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and specifically today, if we look at the calendar for the economic calendar for today on slide 9, you see that we have those FOMC minutes. Now, this is a meeting that took place 3 weeks ago. At that time, we had seen that initial little poke higher in yields, and since then, we've also seen some Fed officials saying we're not concerned at these levels. So I don't th think these minutes necessarily contain a lot of clues about the eventual plans for yield curve control, but of course, we should scrutinize them closely for any contingency plans discussed around that policy eventuality. And I really firmly believe it is an eventuality. There's no way that this Treasury issuance will be absorbed by savers or by foreigners without crashing the economy. And the Fed is not going to crash the economy. So it's a question of the timeline and whether they have to wait. And I suspect, given where speculation is, that the trigger here is maybe less the yield level itself and more the waiting for the equity market, the Fed's so-called third mandate, to suffer a sizable consolidation at some point, whether that's from here or not for another 6 weeks of yield rises, et cetera. I don't think it's the yield rise itself. It's the implications of it and the fallout across markets that finally provokes the Fed into motion. And practically speaking with the Treasury having that arsenal of some 1.5 trillion plus parked at the Fed, they do have enough to cover the spending needs out into sometime in Q3. So that's the balance of things, I think, as it stands. It's important. And it will affect risk sentiment, and then at some point, the Fed will step in with yield curve control guidance, and that'll be the key next phase that tries to, restoke speculative spirits, et cetera, down the road. So let's not get ahead of ourselves, but I think that's the lay of the land going forward. And then going forward as well, we've got the retail sales up today. That's expected to have showed a strong jump from the new stimulus checks. We'll have even further stimulus checks coming on board soon, likely with the Biden stimulus to be passed, et cetera. And we'll watch those numbers as they start rolling in the wake of that. And then note, there's an Australian employment report up in Asia tonight. And we have China back online tonight. It should be noted as well, back from their extended New Year holiday. Again, helmets on, stay careful out there, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call for today. Thanks for joining.